Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Oh, that first hour went fast, so I'm really looking forward to this hour because it's all conversations with non-Catholics, which is a lot of fun for us. I hope it's a lot of fun for those who call as well to get to talk about maybe stuff they don't have a Catholic Catholic expert available to call and ask about. If you are a non-Catholic, this hour is for you. If you got a question about the church, you got a question about Jesus, you got a question about the Trinity, the Bible, the moral teachings of the church, whatever it is, it's an open forum for non-Catholics. As long as you're not Catholic, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884, 31 Truth, and another great guest for you this hour. Steve Ray is our guest. Steve Ray, a well-known author, a filmmaker, a tour guide, a pilgrimage leader of great renown, and now the author of a really extensive commentary on the Book of Genesis out now. It is out now from Ignatius Press. Steve, thanks for being here.
Thank you. This is book number 6. Let me read what Jimmy Akin wrote on the back of this book.
Okay.
He said, if there's one word that characterizes Steve Ray, it is adventure. In this commentary on Genesis, Steve embarks on the adventure of the first book of the Bible, creatively drawing together ideas of a vast array of sources, biblical commentaries, papal teachings, Jewish teachers, church fathers, science, and even science fiction. Join him on his quest. That's what Jimmy Akin wrote.
That's
about
perfect.
It. And I got Tim Staples here too, but I won't read that one too much. Here it is, and it's a fun book to read.
So you got the Catholic Answers Apologists imprimaturs. That's good. That's a really nice review. That captures the way you write as well, Jimmy. It is an adventure, actually, the Book of Genesis, and you do take people on an adventure.
It is. People think that it's, whenever I get in an interview on Genesis, they all start talking about creation. Well, that's great, but that's only the first 2 chapters out of 50.
Right.
The Book of Genesis is a marvelous, rollicking adventure following Abraham all through this torturous life that he had, really, and then his kind of blah son Isaac, who didn't do anything heroic, and then Jacob, who's cantankerous and he's a crook.
Yeah.
And he negotiates everything with God. He never takes anything for granted. If you do this for me, and if you do this for me, then maybe you'll be my God, he says. And then you've got Joseph, who's a picture of Christ. So Genesis is a fascinating book.
It is a fascinating book. And Ignatius Press, a great publisher. They published some of your other works as well. So,
yeah,
congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Now you can, I always say this about you, the only guy I know that can say he wrote Genesis and the Gospel of St. John.
Yep. And now I'm starting on Acts of the Apostles.
But you're going to do a commentary on Acts?
Yeah, that's the next one. I'm already working on it. Ignatius asked me to do that. And that's really interesting because it's going to be the birthday of the church. It's about the beginning of Christianity.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Luke writes 60-year time span, 30 years of the life of Christ and 30 years of the beginning of the church. And his book of Luke is the longest book of the New Testament. And so...
Now you gave us something else to look forward to. I tell you what else you can look forward to with Steve Ray. As I mentioned, he has led pilgrimages all over the world, but quite well known for leading pilgrimages to the Holy Land. You got any of those coming up? You going to the Holy Land?
I have 4 this year still, and they're all completely sold out. Even a 2-busser is sold out. But I have 7 more next year. Now, I do one every year that goes to Jordan for 5 days, with 1 day at the Marriott Dead Sea Resort. We spend a whole day there. But it's 5 days in Jordan and 8 days in Israel. And that one is in February, and I only have 4 seats left on that bus. And that's one of our favorites. St. Paul cruise next year. We're going to hit 10 biblical sites. We're going to start
that.
In Rome.
Yeah.
And hit 3 days in Rome. Then we're going to take a super fast ferry with your own 5-star cabin. And we end up in Greece and we see Corinth and Athens and Thessalonica and Philippi and Neapolis and Istanbul and the island of Patmos and Ephesus and Pergamum. And that's one of my favorites.
That is so, you know what? You're very fortunate that St. Paul traveled in one of the most beautiful areas of the world. So
yeah.
you can do the St. Paul trip and see that. The number here is 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. Steve Ray is our guest. And if you are not a Catholic, you are welcome to call. I should tell you, Steve Ray's website is CatholicConvert.com. Catholic.com, and he is himself a convert to the Catholic faith. Became a committed Christian because of hearing the preaching of Billy Graham. So whatever your background is, Steve's ready for you. 888-318-7884. I always loved that story of you. I think you were 17 and you went outside and gave your life to Christ.
I heard Billy Graham on the radio, and it just slammed me. Especially when beautiful? George Beverly Shea starts singing "Just As I Am," and oh my goodness, it sent me out. I was a long-haired hippie kid, my hair down on my shoulders, bell-bottom blue jeans, and I'm just as stubborn and rebellious as you can be. And I'm out on this country road, and I look up and say, "Jesus, I'm only 17 years old, but tonight I'm going to give my whole life to you." And I did. And I did.
Right.
With tears in my eyes, you know, this rebellious hippie kid. Here I am looking up at the heavens. And that was the trajectory, like a rocket. And I have lived it better some days than others, but that's always been the day
that
I'll always remember. That's the rocket ship took off.
Your hair is shorter now, Steve.
Oh, my goodness.
And I use the word hair generously. Yeah.
Because if not, the glare, you know, people wouldn't even be able to watch it. The glare is too bright.
All right. Every line is full now, Steve. Shall we take some calls?
Oh, my. Sure. Let's do it. I love doing this show with you.
Open forum for non-Catholics today. We go to Casper in San Antonio, Texas. Casper, thank you for the call. Go ahead with your question for Steve Ray.
All right. Thanks for taking my call. Well, my question is, what is the Catholic Church's teaching concerning the Kabbalah in the Jewish tradition, and whether since Christianity is kind of like a continuation of that tradition, since Jesus was a Jew, if there is a continuation of the Kabbalah in the Catholic Church or some type of exoteric doctrine? That's my question.
Well, very good. The Catholic Church, I don't think, has any official teaching on the Kabbalah. What it is, just so people will know, the word that probably describes it best is mysticism. And I would say it's kind of like the normal Catholic and a charismatic Catholic. People will argue with that, but it's an illustration I think might help somebody understand. It's the Jewish people who have taken a very mystical step about almost like a personal relationship with God. How does the transcendent God and us down here on the earth, what is our relationship? And it's almost a mystical personal relationship, more so maybe than the Orthodox Jews have. So that's kind of what Kabbalah is. I mean, it's a whole, it started in about 1,000 years ago, and you could go on a lot about it. But I don't think the Catholic Church has anything specific teaching about it, but what you said is very true, in that everything started out, it was all Israel, it was Jewish. We as Catholics, as Christians, we are like branches stuck into the root and the trunk. What is the root and the trunk is Israel.
Yes.
We are the branches and the fruit and the leaves that come out of Israel. We are the inheritance, in a sense. When a Jewish person converts. I remember one time I gave my conversion story, a Baptist to Catholic, and a Jewish woman stood up and she said, "I'm a convert to the Catholic Church." And I said, "Ma'am, no, you're not." And she was shocked. And she says, "Well, yes, I am. I converted the Catholic Church." I says, "No, ma'am, you became a fulfilled Jew. You, being a Jew, discovered your Messiah, and therefore now you are a fulfilled Jew following the Jewish Messiah." And she said, "You're right." So we as Catholics, we view ourselves really as Jewish in the sense that Jesus was the Jewish Messiah and we believe in him. In fact, when you say you're a Christian, people don't know what that means. The word Christ is the Greek word for Messiah, which is the Hebrew word. Hebrew Messiah, Greek Christ. That's the same word, just two languages. So when you say you are a Christian, you are saying you are a follower of the Jewish Messiah. So here I am, a Gentile, but I do have 0.6% Jewish blood in me, I found out. I did a genealogy test. I'm 0.6% Ashkenazi Jew, and so is my wife. I was so delighted to find I had the blood of Abraham in my veins, even a little bit. But we are the followers of the Jewish Messiah, and Christianity is the continuation, so to speak, of Israel, of the Jewishness. So even Paul said, you Gentiles, you were grafted in to the trunk of the tree, which is Israel.
Casper, I'm going to leave it there because I got to take the first break, but thank you for the call. There is one line open, so if you are not a Catholic and you'd like to ask a question of a Catholic expert, you are welcome. 888-318-7884.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The Messy Family Podcast empowers mom and dads to embrace their sacred calling by helping you become a good parent and a great spouse. You can hear the Messy Family Podcast as well as faith-filled podcasts from our friends and affiliates across the nation, all in one place, all free at EWTN Podcast Central. Visit EWTNradio.net/podcasts today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Steve Ray, our guest this hour, and it's an open forum for non-Catholics. If you are not a Catholic and you want to talk to someone who knows the Catholic faith very well and is very willing to enter into conversation with you, just pick up the phone and call 888-318-7884. We go now to Elise in Indiana. Elise, welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
So I have friends who are Seventh-day Adventists. I'm not. I am Protestant, but I disagree with them on their take that we should be worshiping on the seventh or the on the Sabbath on Saturdays still as Christians. But I guess I don't know exactly why I disagree or how to formulate that. I do respect a lot of Catholic viewpoints, so I did want to hear a Catholic take on that whole issue. Why do we worship on Sunday? Why don't we worship on Saturday?
Elise, thank you very much.
The Seventh-day Adventists started about 150 years ago. So they are like the Muslims and like the, what's the other group? Anyway, they're like the ones and the Jehovah's Witnesses that believe that the church and Christians were wrong for 1900 years, and they just now rediscovered again 150 years ago. So what they're saying is that by discovering that the Sabbath is still on a Saturday, her name was Ellen White. She came up with this idea about 150 years ago, and now they've restored true Christianity. Well, what that's saying is that for 1900 years, nobody knew how to get saved. Everybody had the mark of the beast on them, because that's what they say, that Sunday worship is the mark of the beast. And what they're really saying is that the gates of hell did prevail against the church for 1900 years until they happened to figure it out again in the last 100. So that's one point. Second point is that they also say that the Sabbath is something that started in Genesis and it became the rules and all that. And it didn't. It didn't happen until well into Exodus, much later down the road. So it's not something that started in the book of Genesis. It started after the Exodus, and it was as a result of the Exodus. They also say that it's an eternal covenant, therefore you have to follow it. But also in the Old Testament, it said that circumcision is the same. So I don't see the Seventh-day Adventists going around telling all the men that they have to be circumcised. They do the seventh-day thing on Saturday, but they don't go around telling everybody that they have to be circumcised, which is right up there with the Sabbath as an Old Testament command. Now, when I grew up, we had a family that used to come over to our house every Saturday afternoon because they were Seventh-day Adventists, and my dad always had all these really odd friends. And this whole family would come over every Friday, Saturday afternoon, because they just got done with Sabbath school. That's what they called it. And they'd come to our house because we had a pool and horses and everything. And they always tried to get us to join the Seventh-day Adventist Church and tell us we were wrong. So, I mean, this is something I heard about new when I was a kid. But what happens is when Jesus rose from the dead, the church then referred to the day of the resurrection as the Lord's Day. And you can look through the New Testament over and over again, and it's called the Lord's Day. Paul says, when you gather together on the Lord's Day, take up a collection. In other words, the church gathered together on Sunday, the first day of the week. Why? because the Christians believe that the number 8 was the day number of the resurrection. When I take our groups to Capernaum, the church has 8 sides. They say, why does this why is it an octagonal church? Because resurrection is the number 8. And it says that the resurrection took place on the 8th day of the week, so to speak. So you have the whole week, and then Saturday is the 7th day he's buried, and on the 8th day of the week, I know we don't have 8 days in a week, but that's what the Christians called it, the 8th day. Then Jesus rose from the dead. And that is the day where we celebrate the resurrection. And the church universally, and in the Bible, and I know they have their arguments for this, but they're very weak and ineffective, and they're ignoring scripture. The Bible says over and over in the New Testament that it is the Lord's day. Even John on the island of Patmos said, I was in the spirit on the Lord's day. That's Sunday. So it moved that day of worship from being Saturday to being Sunday, to acknowledge the day of the resurrection, the day of new birth, the day of Christ. And in the way, you can also look at it this way. In the Old Testament, you worked 6 days, and then on the 7th day, you rested. And now, because Christ has done the work for us, he flips it. Now you rest on the first day, and you go out and work for Christ the next 6 days.
Does that... go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I just think it's really quite simple, but they got a bee in their bonnet. And they build a whole relation, a whole religion just on that one point. And they're willing to ostracize everybody else to tell them they're not going to heaven and that they're following the mark of the beast, all because of that one thing. The New Testament debunks them.
Elise?
Yeah, that's a really solid answer. Yeah. I really appreciate it. something I want to quickly say is that they do acknowledge Easter. They do celebrate Easter, and it's really awkward because they don't meet on Easter Sunday, and that's the one time a year where it's, like, glaringly strange. It's like, you know what? That's why we meet on Sundays, guys.
Oh, Elise, that's so interesting. I've never heard anyone else explain that about the Seventh-day Adventists.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, because they get together on Saturday, and there's just, like, nothing on Easter Sunday of all days, nothing.
Well, if you want to follow up on what Steve had to say, we have lots of written material on a Catholic view of Seventh-day Adventists at Catholic.com. That's our website, or you can always call back here. But if you want something that you could, say, print out and give to somebody or something like that, you can get that for free at Catholic.com, where we have thousands of articles.
One quick comment is, in your tracts on Catholic Answers, you guys have some of the best stuff, and it's simple. It's short, it's very concise and biblical, and you have no idea how often I go to that page, all of those different documents, and print them out and give them to people and put them up on websites and blogs. You guys do a great job on the things that you put up there in the writings, but also your story. Anybody can trust what you have in your store because you know it's going to be good stuff. So,
well, thanks, Steve.
Great resource.
I do think with those tracks, you know, it goes all the way back to our founder, Carl Keating, and then...
Yep. Catholic Answers.
Jimmy Akin and
Patrick Madrid.
Patrick Madrid. I don't know why I was blanking on the great Patrick Madrid, but these are early folks here at Catholic Answers produced these tracks that still today have enormous value. Elise, thanks very much for the call. I will continue on here. There are a couple lines open. If you'd like to get in the queue, we'd love to talk with you. If you're non-Catholic and have a question about the Catholic view of things, 888-318-7884. Julian is in Atlanta, Georgia. Julian, go ahead with your question for our guest, Steve Ray.
Yes, my question was concerning the 7 books of the Bible, the Catholic Bible that Protestants reject. I was wondering what some specific teachings or theology would be from those books.
Oh, good question. Well, one thing it does, it fills in a big gap, because with the Protestant Bible, it ends with the book of Malachi, so you roughly have a 400-plus year gap in what's of God speaking, so to speak. Yeah, he's silent for 400 years, but he really wasn't, because in the Deuterocanonical, we call them the Deuterocanonical books, they fill in a lot of that time period, and you learn one of the reasons that I found out that they're important is because Martin Luther disliked them so much. And one of the reasons he disliked them, because it said that to pray for the dead is a good and holy thing, and various things that went, and when he said that it was by faith alone and that you can't help do anything for prayers for people who have died and gone beyond. See, when Jesus, he's one who him and Paul used those seven books because they had what they called the Septuagint, which was the Greek translation of the Old Testament. And it wasn't Christian per se. It was translated by the Greek Jews 250 years before the time of Christ, because many of the Jews had scattered around after Alexander the Great. The great diaspora, the Jews were all over, and they spoke Greek. So they made a Bible called the Septuagint, and it was the Greek translation of the Old Testament. And those are the books that Jesus and Paul used. 80% of Paul's quotes are from the Greek Septuagint, not the Hebrew text. And that Greek Septuagint contained those seven books. So Paul, and even when you read in the New Testament, there are allusions. There are places where you can find them referred to, these seven books. But there's another. It fills in a gap of time. It teaches things about the resurrection and about prayer for the dead and atonement. That was a development of Jewish doctrine, not denied or disregarded by Jesus or Paul, but continued with them. And it also, I would say, there's other great examples of heroism in there. For example, the Maccabean woman whose seven sons were being killed, martyred, because they refused to eat pork. They refused to give up their Jewish law and the law of God. And they are even celebrated in the feast days of the church because they're so heroic. And his mother said to the youngest son, after the first six had been killed already as a martyr, she said, "Son, I don't know how God knit you together in my womb, but he did it through his divine power. And he gave you to me, and how he knit you in my womb, I don't know. But I know that he can raise you from the dead. So do not hesitate to die as a martyr for God. We will never disobey his laws, and we will die rather than disobey him." So you've got also great stories of heroism in those books. So I would say that they're quite valuable.
Okay, Julian?
Nope. Yeah, thank you. That was a lot of, I hadn't really heard anything described in those books before, so that was very interesting. Thank you.
All right.
You're welcome.
All right, Julian, thank you very, very much for the call and for the question. It's open forum for non-Catholics today on Catholic Answers Live. If you are not a Catholic, and you'd like to talk, you'd like to ask about any aspect of the Catholic faith or challenge, you're very welcome here. 888-318-7884. Lacey is in Pennsylvania. Lacey, thank you for the call. Go ahead with the question.
Hi, Stephen Tsai. So just to give a little bit of a background, I grew up in Reformed Judaism, but I am looking to start RCIA and convert to Catholicism.
Praise God.
But nonetheless, I mean, there are some times, like anybody else, I go through really intense moments of doubting.
Mm-hmm.
So
good.
Go ahead, Steve.
I say good that you go through times of doubting, because once you come in, you will have those doubts resolved and you will have spiritual muscles because of it. So, you know, even in my conversion process, there's a whole struggle that you go through, but the struggle makes you stronger and it makes you more wise. So take all of these struggles and embrace them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean, sometimes I'll find myself questioning, and I know it's not true, but I'll get into an argument of, was Jesus the Messiah and did Jesus found the Catholic Church? And I'll be questioning that, even though I know it's true. So what would you say would be the best argument when I experience those doubts to say, no, Jesus, he was the Messiah, and he did found the Catholic Church?
Well, that's a good question. When John the Baptist was a good Jewish, he was the last of the Old Testament prophets. And the book of Malachi, the last Jewish prophet, said that before the great and awesome day of the Lord, Elijah shall return and prepare the way for the Lord. John the Baptist was down in the Jordan Valley, and I'll be there four more times this year, right where he was baptizing. And he was saying that I am the one preparing the way for the Messiah, for the one who is to come. And when Jesus came, the people there saw and all witnessed that the dove came down and landed on him in a bodily form. And the voice of God said, "This is my beloved son, in whom I'm well pleased." In the New Testament, by the way, in the Gospel of John and others, God spoke from heaven three times. In the Old Testament, we knew that the Messiah was going to be prophet, priest, and king. Those are the three major offices of the Jewish, of the land of Israel, and the kingdom of Israel, the prophet, the priest, and the king. And they knew that the Messiah was going to be all three of those. And one of the interesting things is that God spoke from heaven three times, that where people heard him, his voice. One was in John chapter 12, and it's all about the kingship. He's riding his donkey into the gates by the Gihon Springs on the east side of Jerusalem, just like Solomon did. And he says, "This is, I have glorified my name, and I'll glorify it again." He's confirming Jesus as he's coming in on the donkey, just like Solomon did. He's confirming that he is the king. "I've glorified my name, I've glorified it again." When he was in the Jordan River, and he's being and anointed by John the Baptist, the voice of God said, "This is my son." He's ordaining him as the priest. And on the Mount Tabor at the Transfiguration, he said, "This is my beloved son. Listen to him. He's the prophet." So the three times God spoke from heaven was acknowledging Jesus as prophet, priest, and king. And if we have time, we'll do more after that.
Hang on. We'll do more right after this. Excitement is building for Catholic Answers Annual Apologetics Conference, I Believe in God. There's still time to join us September 21st through 24th in sunny San Diego as we welcome Scott Hahn and an all-star lineup of speakers, as well as your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. Join us for a conference that is sure to ignite, encourage, and inform your faith. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 888-291-8000.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
Is relativism dead? It sure seems dead. Each day, new moral demands are made and they are presented to us as absolutes. Everything from transgender ideology to physician-assisted suicide is presented as a moral good that all right-thinking people must accept. But Catholic Answers' own Carla Broussard says look deeper, and you will see today's moralism is just relativism dressed up in new clothes. Carla's eye-opening book, The New Relativism, shines a light on how the sacred moral teachings of this age cover up a deep denial of moral truth. Order your copy of The New Relativism today at shop.catholic.com and be prepared to defend the truth against aggressive relativism. The New Relativism at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Janet Benkovic-Williams. There's nothing like Women of Grace to explain the truth of our faith Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern here on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Having a lot of fun with Steve Ray, our guest. CatholicConvert.com is his website. And if you are not a Catholic convert, that is, you haven't entered the Catholic Church, Lacey, who we're on the line with right now, thinking about coming in via the RCIA, but raised Jewish, and so she fits the bill, not yet Catholic, and it's a non-Catholic open forum today, 888-318-7884. The music was rushing you along while you were trying to answer Lacey's very, very reasonable question about what evidence there is that Jesus is the Jewish Messiah.
And we touched on the three times God spoke from heaven, each time confirming one of the offices of Israel, prophet, priest, and king. I'd also say that Jesus, he is very clear that he's the Messiah. He can't say it too quickly in the Gospels because he knows he's going to be his ministry for 3 years and he doesn't want to get killed the first 6 months. So he has to kind of be careful. And he'd say, "Now don't tell them everything I've said to you, tell them later." But he said that I am going to build my church. The word church is ecclesia, the called out ones. Even I just have no, I wish we had an hour to talk to Lacey, but when you discover typology, I'm going to try to do two things here. When you discover typology, that means that people, places, or things, or events in the Old Testament prefigure things in the life of Christ. And it shows that he is the fulfillment of the whole Old Testament. For example, all of the sacrifices of Moses, the Passover lamb is a picture of Christ. He is our Passover lamb. In fact, the very day on Passover that they were certifying in the temple that the lambs were ready and without blemish and prepared to be the sacrifice for Passover, Jesus is in front of Pilate and he says, I find no fault in him. In other words, this is the real Lamb of God. He's going to go to the cross and he's going to die as a Passover lamb. So the same day that all the lambs are being certified as being blameless, Herod makes the declaration that Jesus is without sin and blameless. And then Jesus goes the same day to his sacrifice. And all of the sacrifices of the Old Testament, I give a talk on this. I just love doing it. All of them prefigure the death of Christ. All of those do. And in the Old Testament, even the rabbis, if you look, they have what's called the Todah, the sacrifice, the Todah sacrifice. And they say that when the Messiah comes, all of the sacrifices of Moses will be done away with. And there will only be one remaining sacrifice, and it's called the Todah sacrifice. And I'm sure that Lacey knows what the word Todah means. It means thanks. What does the word Eucharist mean? Thanks. So they said that when the Messiah comes, all of those will be done away with, and they'll all be only one. They'll be culminated into one sacrifice called the Todah sacrifice, the Eucharistia. And what does the church practice from the first day? In the upper room, Jesus celebrated the first Eucharist, the first Todah sacrifice. This is, the Catholic Church is the heir of Judaism. Judaism just rolls right in. Jesus is the Messiah. And he then takes what God had given the Jews and he brings it right into the new Israel. That's what we call it, the fulfillment. The church is the fulfillment of Israel through their Messiah. They're all waiting for the Messiah. And they missed him when he came around the first time. But they'll catch him around on the second time. But then the and also another way you can know he's the Messiah is that you've got guys, the first Christians in Christianity were not Gentiles. The first Gentile was Cornelius, and that could have been 8 to 10 years later. So maybe even for the first 5 to 10 years, all of the first Christians were Jews on the day of Pentecost. They weren't Gentiles that came. They came from all these different lands, it says. They were not, they were the Jews that had come for the Passover, and they heard and they saw the winds, and they'd heard about Jesus rising from the dead and ascending into heaven, and Peter stood up and preached, and it was the Jewish people who believed, not Gentiles. And for the first 5 to 10 years, it was only Jews who believed. And in the book of Acts, it says that many, many priests, the Jewish people and many priests and high priests came to believe in him. And then you see the church take off, and then there became issues with Jew and Gentile, of course, because, you know, my goodness, it's like the movie Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, sociological two different societies coming together, Jew and Gentile, were so different, and the Jews had nothing to do with the Gentiles, and all of a sudden now there's one body of Christ, which is Jew and Gentile. So there's so much to say. I can't take up the whole show on this, but I tell you, Lacey, you're on a very exciting adventure, especially for a Jewish person, because a Gentile to become a Christian is one thing, but for a Jew to discover your Messiah and to then the fulfillment of Judaism, you're going to be experiencing, and you're going to experience the one sacrifice that even the rabbis said would be the Thanksgiving sacrifice, which is the Eucharist. And the whole thing is beautiful.
Lacey, what do you think?
Thank you so much. That is so helpful, Steve. I oftentimes feel like it's a silly question. I feel like it's a silly question sometimes because people look at me and I'm like, well, I'm like, I don't understand sometimes, and that's just so helpful.
I would just suggest a writer to you and maybe a particular book from him. John Bergsma is a wonderful biblical scholar, and he wrote a book called The Jewish Roots of the Eucharist. And I think he might have written one called The Jewish Roots of the Church, but do you guys remember? Did he write that? I don't remember.
He wrote one on the Dead Sea Scrolls. But yeah. I'll tell you, Lacey, if you send me an email. I'll send you a copy of my book on Genesis. I'll send it to you for free. Because Genesis, when you read that, you are going to see how Genesis is all about Jesus Christ as the Messiah. Everything in Genesis is pointing forward to him. Genesis is full of the Messiah, and you can see Jesus almost in every page.
Lacey, I'm very grateful for the call. If you want to leave your email, just hang on, and Edgar will get your information. If you leave your an address that Steve can get in touch with you, then we'll connect the two of you and make sure that you get that book, because we're not letting Steve off the hook on a free book.
I'd love to send that to Lacey. That's very exciting.
Open forum for non-Catholics. I got to keep moving on. Did you guys find out, did John Bergsma write the Jewish roots of what? And I know he wrote the wonderful book on the Dead Sea Scrolls. All right, I'll find it, because I may have gotten confused, and I don't want to leave the wrong impression if I did. Jill is in Arizona. Jill, go ahead with your question for Steve Ray.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm Protestant, and my husband is Catholic. We both were previously married to other people and got divorced years ago, both of us for biblical reasons. We got married. We started going to a Catholic church, and I asked to speak to a priest about becoming Catholic. He directed us to a canon lawyer, and they do not recognize our marriage as valid. And I don't necessarily agree with going through the annulment process because it's really invasive. And they would actually contact my ex-husband. And I just want to know, why does a Catholic church do this, especially when there could be previous abuse involved? Why would a person have to be in contact
this
with
is a big
else
question.
That causes that?
It's a big question, and it hinders a lot of people from converting, because it is a huge issue. Because what the Catholic Church believes is that Jesus said that once a man marries a woman, it is a covenant for a lifetime. And that if you leave your husband or wife, then you are breaking that covenant. But divorce isn't a sin. Divorce doesn't keep you from the Eucharist, but divorce and remarriage does, because you have broken the bond of an original marriage. It's called a covenant. And then you have, while that person is still alive, you've taken on another covenant. And Jesus said that that's a committing of adultery. I mean, I know that sounds harsh, and I'm not the one that says it. Jesus says anyone that divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery. Jesus said that, not me. So the Catholic Church takes his words very seriously. And what the annulment process is the Catholic Church knows that not every marriage is a legitimate marriage. Now, you got to make a distinction between like a civil marriage and a covenant. A sacramental marriage is the word. And so, say, for example, you were married and your father held a shotgun to your head at 16 and forced you to marry a man, or you married a man who ended up telling you later he's decided he was never going to have children, or he's going to abuse you and beat you, all those things. Those are all reasons for the church to declare that marriage to be null and void. Therefore, the covenant does not exist. Therefore, since there is no prior covenant with another person, you can enter into another covenant with someone else without committing adultery, according to Jesus's words. I hope that makes sense. But, and now to divorce for biblical reasons, I'm not sure what that means, but I do not suggest anybody live with a husband that abuses them, or with an alcoholic husband or abuses them, or who runs around and so on. Or I know people that got married and then the husband told them, or the wife told them afterwards, I have never intended to have children and I'm not going to have any children. Well, that nullifies a marriage, the covenant, because that's part of the covenant between a man and a woman is to have children. So what the annulment process does is it tries to help you. It's really a merciful thing in trying to help you to analyze that marriage with the goal of showing that it might not have been a legitimate sacramental marriage because your husband was Catholic, and therefore it leaves you free to marry another. And I think that's kind of a simple summary, and I know that not everybody agrees with it, but that is the way the church sees it.
And I got to leave it there because I have to take the break. I got the wrong. I said John Bergsma, and who did write a fantastic book on the Dead Sea Scrolls. It was Dr. Brant Petrie that wrote the Jewish Roots of the Eucharist. So I apologize for that. But check out if you just search the Jewish Roots of the Eucharist, you'll find it. Got to take a break. Right back with more Open Forum for non-Catholics with our guest Steve Ray. Right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
This is Father John Trigilio. We need Catholic Radio because it is a lifeline to Holy Mother Church. Catholic Radio enables us to know what the Church teaches, but also to have solidarity with one another. It is one way that we express our commonality, our communio, that we are family. And by staying together, we can be God's children here on earth.
The world needs EWTN Catholic Radio, now more than ever.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Lots and lots of folks on the line, so we will just go straight back to the phones with our guest, Steve Ray. It's a non-Catholic open forum today. If you're not a Catholic, you are welcome to call with your question. And we've got Brian in St. Louis up next. Brian, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Steve.
Thanks for taking my call, first of all.
Sure.
My question has to do with the title of the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church. And my question is, what's the history with the Roman part being attached to the Catholic Church?
Okay. The official name of the church is not Roman Catholic Church. It is the Catholic Church, which simply means it's the universal. Catholic means universal, for all the truth, for all the people, all the time. The word Roman comes in because when Paul and Peter ended up in Rome and shed their blood there, the early church said that the Church of Rome was built on the blood of the two princes of the apostles, those two great apostles, Peter and Paul. Jesus had said to Peter, "You are Peter, you are rocking on this rock. I'll build my church and I'll give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and what you bind on earth will be bound in heaven," and so on. And so from that was understood, Jesus is the king. He's delegating his royal steward, who's going to represent him with the keys of the kingdom after he leaves and goes to heaven. And he appointed Peter to do that. And it's based on the Old Testament form of government of Israel. And Jesus is the king. Kings always had royal stewards. They give them the keys. The keys represents their authority in the kingdom. So he gives Peter those keys. Peter then becomes the vice regent, or the major domo, whatever you want to call it. And Peter went from Jerusalem, which was kind of a backwater town at the time, and he went to the center of the hub. The hub of the wheel is in Rome. And when you get the gospel in Rome, then it's going to go out to all the different directions from Rome. And it did. It's got like all roads lead to Rome, but also all roads lead out from Rome. And Peter set up the church there. And he and Paul built the church there, so to speak, and founded it. But Peter was the one who all the early Christians, and I have a 350-page book called Upon This Rock, where I show over the first 8 centuries of the church, all the Christians recognized Peter as being the head bishop, and he was in Rome. Now, the Roman part comes in this way. There are different rites, R-I-T-E-S, rites in the church. I think there's like 23 of them. There's the Roman Catholic Church. There's the Greek Catholic Church. There's the Byzantine Catholic Church. All of these are in union with the Pope. All of these are in union together with their bishops and the Pope in one universal Catholic Church. But in this big thing called the Catholic Church, there are different ways different rites or different ways that they dress and the different ways that they worship, although they have the seven sacraments and they have the same Eucharist, they have the same love of Mary, all of this, but they just have their kind of local flavor. They have the Maronites from up in Lebanon and the Melkites from the Middle East area and Malabar rites from India, but they're all part of the Catholic Church, and Roman Catholic is just one of those 24 rites.
Does that make sense to you, Brian?
Well, I do have some questions if you have time.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. With the Roman Catholic title, wouldn't it the Western Church that was centered in Rome, like you've espoused, that would be called the Roman Catholic Church?
Well, that most of those rites, that's
not just a part, but.
Yeah,
I understand what he's saying with the rites.
But all I'm going to say, most of those rites are in the East, and so we usually call those the Eastern Catholic churches.
Right, right. And you're right. The Roman Catholic is considered the Western, and a lot of those other rites are considered the Eastern because they are in the East. But, you know, if I go to Israel, which I'll be there next week, I'm going to take people to meet the bishop, but he's called a patriarch, and he's not called the Roman Catholic patriarch. He's called the Latin patriarch. So in much of the world, they don't even use the word Roman Catholic Church. They call it the Latin Church, the Latin Rite Church. So that, but you're correct, that it is viewed as the Western Church.
Now, Brian, unfortunately, I will have to leave it there because I'm looking at the clock and I don't have a lot of time, and I do have several calls still on the line. It's an open forum for non-Catholics today, and all of our callers, and we're very grateful for all the calls we've received, are not Catholic. Up next, I'm going to Andrew.
Andrew,
Lincoln, Nebraska. Andrew, thank you very much for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Steve.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, happy to.
I guess I was just telling the call screener just a very brief summary here. So it's probably been almost a year now, but I was raised Baptist, and I in somewhat of a anti-Catholic environment. And anyway, I was in the Catholic Church about a year ago. Excuse me. I didn't think I was going to feel like this. And somebody had asked me, you know, if I was Catholic, and I said no. And I just said there was a couple things that I didn't really, that I couldn't get on board with. And as soon as I said what I said, I felt a very gentle conviction.
Ah, good.
And
the Holy Spirit has a way of doing that.
Right. And so I've considered calling this show more than once. And Steve, when I heard that you were on today, I decided to call because since last year I purchased Crossing the Tiber, and I've been reading that.
Oh, boy.
And so
that's my conversion story. For those who don't know, I wrote Crossing the Tiber of why my wife and I became Catholic. And I wrote it for my father, who was a very anti-Catholic Baptist too. I was raised the same way as you, Andrew. I was raised that Catholics are going to hell. And for me to become a Catholic was the most amazing thing that ever happened.
Andrew, it's an absolutely magnificent story, but it sounds like you're still in the midst of this story. Are you moving towards coming into the Catholic Church, or would you like help in that regard, or what can we do for you, Andrew?
Well, so I've told one person who is Catholic, and his brother is a priest, and so I guess, like, just to give you a little bit more info, when this happened to me, because I've had this before, you know, where I'm not talking about fear, I'm not talking about anxiety, I'm talking about a gentle conviction.
Yes.
Where God was telling me, Andrew, why do you think that way? Why is it that you think that?
That's Him.
Yeah.
That's the Lord.
That's beautiful.
Right. And so, but I have to be honest, though. There's a lot of things, because that I was raised in a very anti-Catholic environment. And so I don't consider myself that way at all. I attended Mass last weekend, and my wife and I are planning on doing it again this weekend. I'm not quite ready to bring, we have four children, to bring all four of them with us.
Slow. There's no hurry. Take your time.
Right. So that was what I was telling the call screener. Just my question is just what kind of advice, just general advice you can give to me for I know that from what I read from your book, I relate a lot to some of what, how you grew up, attending a Baptist church, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, let me just say, Andrew, that you're on an amazing adventure, and you're going to come to a point where you know you're no longer a Baptist and a Protestant, but you're not yet a Catholic, so you're stuck in this no man's land, a buffer zone in between, and you feel like you're getting shot at from both sides. But once you get across that Tiber River and you splash over to the other side, you'll never look back. Because of our both of our upraising as Baptists who are pretty anti-Catholic, I'll tell you that I had nightmares for the first few years after becoming Catholic. My wife would wake me up in the middle of the night. I'm sweating and tossing in bed. She said, "Steve, you must be having a nightmare." And I said, "Oh, it was a horrible nightmare. I just dreamt that I'd become Catholic." And she said, "Steve, you did." And I think for a minute, go, "Oh, yeah." And I'd roll over and go back to sleep.
Wow.
So don't expect it to be easy. Even though you, even intellectually, you come to the conclusion that it's true, and you can explain the sacraments, and you can explain the papacy and Peter, the chair of Peter. They're still going to be in the marrow of your bones, in your emotions, those old Baptist feelings that come up and say, "This can't be right, this can't be right." And just say to yourself, "Yes, it can. I reasoned my way into this. God called me into this. And I know it's the truth." And how? Hopefully your children are young. They'll come along with you. I had two older kids, and they said they weren't going to join with us. I had just written that letter to my dad, which is now Crossing the Tiber, that book you're reading. It was only a letter to my dad at that time. And I asked my older teenage kids if they would proofread the letter to my dad. And they said, "Sure, we'll proofread it." They took 6 hours to read that letter and came down crying and said, "Dad, we decided to join the Catholic Church with you after we read that letter that you wrote to Grandpa." So your kids, just love them in and just be excited. Be excited. And when you're at Mass, whisper in their ear. I know people say you're not supposed to do that, but whisper in their ear and tell them what's going on. Tell them this is where we remember the death of Jesus, and this is the Lord's Prayer that's in the Bible. And, make the kids be excited about it with you. Make it a family project.
Andrew, we only have about a minute and a half, but I'd love to come back to you and just hear where you are.
Andrew, they're going to give you my email address, okay, because I'd like to be in touch with you.
That's great. Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome. I'll just tell it's SRAY@me.com. S is in Steve. SRAY, real easy, @me.com.
But don't share that with anyone else, Andrew.
Yeah, don't share it with anybody else. I'll get swamped tomorrow.
Okay, understood.
Andrew, we have a couple of books I'd be happy to send you, but I you don't have to take them if you don't want them, and I don't know if this is something you'd be interested in. But we have a little book called The Words of Eternal Life, True Happiness and Where to Find It, kind of an invitation to the Mass, and then a larger book called Why We're Catholic. If you'd like them, I will send them to you.
Sure, yeah, that sounds fantastic.
You know what? Usually the end of the week is an anticlimax here, but boy, you are leaving us with a feeling of joy in our heart, Andrew. And it sounds so familiar the way you describe the hand of the Lord moving in your life, and it just makes you feel like a brother. I want to welcome you as a brother and praise God for His goodness.
One last thing, Andrew. Do you know what Andrew is known for in the Gospels? He's mentioned in lists, but the three times Andrew is mentioned doing something, every time he's bringing people to Jesus. whenever I see somebody named Andrew, I say, your job in life is to bring people to Jesus. Look at him. Look them up in the Gospels. They're all in the Gospel of John.
He said some of the most beautiful words in the Gospel. We have found the Messiah.
That's right. And bring your children to the Messiah, too. Bring your children to Jesus. This is wonderful. Wonderful to talk to you.
Lots of people praying for you right now, Andrew. I know we'll be praying for you. Stay in touch with Steve. And just give us an address, and we'll send you a couple books. And we got more where that came from. If you'd like them. That's going to do it for us. Find all about Steve Ray at CatholicConvert.com. Steve Ray, it's always a thrill. Thanks for being here with us.
Thank you, Si. Looking forward to next time.
Boy, Andrew sent me into the weekend happy. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.